Welcome, everyone, to the City Council meeting and meeting of the Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency for Tuesday, May the 8th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Fellows.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Arnold.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute, and this evening we have Rob Child and John King from our Arroyo Grande Fire Department, gentlemen, to lead us in the flag salute. If you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor George Lepper is here from Peace Lutheran Church to do that for us this evening.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Father of wisdom, we ask you to be with and bless our council meeting this evening. Be with our council members as they go through the business of our city, that we may continue to improve our city and make it the best place to live. We ask you to be with those who work for our city, to watch over them, protect them, and as they serve our city. And Lord, be with those around our country who are going through many problems and grief and the disasters that have happened in our Midwest and also in the East. We ask to be with them and comfort them. Thank you, Lord, for hearing our prayers, for watching over us. In the name of our personal Lord and Savior, amen.
Thank you, Pastor. That takes us to item 5 this evening, special presentations. And we do indeed have two special presentations this evening. And I'm going to step down from the dais to present those at this time. And I would like to invite both Rob Child and John King. Gentlemen, you're in the right place. If you would, move to the podium, and I'll meet you there. Well, it's my privilege, duty, if you will, performing as our neighborhood services coordinators. And this is a program that we historically have referred to as code enforcement, but the title of Neighborhood Services Coordinators has a better ring to it, so that's what we're calling it these days. While they've been doing this along the way, they've managed to achieve several noteworthy accomplishments, and I'm going to list just a few. First and foremost, I think in terms of the city's code enforcement operation, it's now been streamlined, and it is much more positive than it was in previous years. They've effectively managed an increasing code enforcement caseload, and if the figures are right, they've either resolved or closed over 90% of the caseload that they have. They've developed a community outreach education program in an effort to prevent code violations before they occur. Most importantly, they maintain a positive customer service approach, even when dealing with difficult issues. And this is certainly an area where there is potential for that to happen. And these gentlemen have performed admirably in dealing with those issues. And also of note, because of their successes and the fact that they've been able to incorporate these duties along with their duties with the fire department, we have not had to fill the full-time position in code enforcement or neighborhood services. Well, so that has resulted in a savings to the city of approximately $35,000 a year. And we're also grateful for the additional tasks that you've taken on yourself. And one noteworthy task, those of you who have been wandering around our City Hall complex know that from time to time we encounter difficult problem children in our chicken family, and especially with some of the roosters, they can get downright mean, and so we've had to thin the herd, if you will, and these gentlemen have taken on that responsibility and have found homes for the ones that are causing our difficulty, and so we really appreciate that. So, gentlemen, it's a pleasure to present to, John first. Mayor's commendation on this 8th day of May 2007 in recognition of your membership in the Platinum Service Club for service above and beyond the call of duty. So that's for you. And same thing goes for you, Rob.
All right. Thank you, sir.
And because you've saved us so much money, we have a token of appreciation. This is an all-expenses paid vacation to Maui.
Great.
That's right. If it doesn't work when you're getting on the plane, it'll work at McClintock's for dinner. And we would invite you to say a few words.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Just want to take a few minutes to say thank you to everybody I work with and who have taught me everything to really get me to this point. I haven't really stood in front of this crowd before, but this means a lot to me. So thank you. Thank you, my partner. Couldn't do it without him. So everybody at the fire department who backs me up, so very good. And my fiance, Kayla, thanks for being here, too. It means a lot. So.
This evening, the council did meet in closed session and discussed labor issues and personnel issues, and we have no report at this time. I've added a 5B under special presentations, and those of you who have been following some of the news coverage, you know that the city of Aurora Grande is participating in a nationwide program called America in Bloom. And many of our citizens have come forward and participated and worked with our coordinators. And here to not only tell you a little bit more about the program and how it's going, but also introduce our visiting judges for that program, I'd like to introduce Bob Lund. Bob.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council, city staff, and audience. It gives me great pleasure to tell you about these last 6 months. They've been very exciting and very rewarding, especially from the standpoint of community involvement. I was so lucky to bring together some of the best people the city has to offer in order to enter into this competition with America in Bloom. Started about 6 months ago, and the Aurora Grande Village Improvement Association, working with the city as partners, decided that we, as a whole city, could enter into this competition. And luckily, I got Jim Bergman as the co-chair to help me out. So the two of us have done a great job, I think, and then getting some of the other great volunteers like Kristen Barnick for Urban Forestry. By the way, there's 8 areas on which we're judged, and everybody's going to have to help me out remember them. But Urban Forestry, Landscaped Areas, Environment, Tidiness, Community Involvement, Turf and Ground Cover, Floral Displays,
Heritage.
Yeah, heritage is especially important in our community. Other members of the committee included Jane Lyon, of course, who is president of the South County Historical Society. We had Mary Giambalvo and Ron Kindig. Mary is a master gardener. We have Linda Shepherd, who's a retired school teacher who helped us put together this fabulous manual. We had to make 4 copies of it, 1 for each judge, 1 for us, and 1 to send back to the Center of America in Bloom. Who else have I forgotten? I know I have others. You've forgotten them, too. Oh, Vivian Krug for publicity. And I think that's all of them. But I've probably forgotten somebody. Any event, I want to thank them. I want to thank the city staff and the council for all their support. And I also especially want to thank the judges from American in Bloom. And I'd like to introduce them at this time, Diane Klassen and Jim Corfield. Diane is from Cincinnati. Jim is from Chicago, not the big towns, their area. So they're acquainted with towns of our size. We're in competition with 3 other cities across the country. And I'll let Diane tell you just a little bit about that, about the 3 other cities we're in competition with and what happens when we find out where we are. Diane?
Thank you very much, Mayor, Council, and city staff, and citizens of Aurora Grande. Thank you so much for inviting America in Bloom into your community. Aurora Grande is really a community that is made for America in Bloom. You folks were already doing a lot of the things that America in Bloom is on, which is outside of Indianapolis, and Red Wing, Minnesota, which is outside of the Twin Cities. So, of course, we're still waiting for the weather to warm up in those places, the ice and snow to melt before we can visit them. But we're really excited, and from what we've seen here, you've set the bar pretty high. So we will work on the evaluations, and there is a symposium and awards in September that anyone and everyone from Rio Grande is invited to. That's the last weekend in September, and at that time, there'll be an awards ceremony, and you'll see where you ranked in the group and receive your evaluation. But again, thank you so much for inviting us. I can see just from what's happened in the last 6 months, in 6 years, you'll be off the map. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Diane. And I'll also beg you to excuse us because we're going to take them to dinner. Thank you.
Diane, we were hoping that you would judge those other cities where there was still snow on the ground. I guess that's not going to work out, huh? Okay. All right. At this time, we're going to take a short recess. I think members of the council want to say goodbye to our judges, and then we will reconvene in about 5 minutes. Okay. Okay, council is back in session. We are on item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to come forward and comment on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you come forward, address the council as a whole. Please be observant of the 3-minute rule and state your name for the record. Anyone who would like to come forward during community comments and suggestions. Again, items not on this evening's agenda.
Good evening, Kristen Barnett, 212 Canyon Way. I'm also the chair of the Tree Guild of Arroyo Grande. We'll work for free or maybe for a sandwich. This is Mike Barnett, Chuck and Linda Fellows, Matt Fellows, Candy Reuter, Ed Arnold, Gary Sherquist, Dixon Smith, Rob Strong, Madeline Polin, Jim Bergman, Carrie Randolph, Cheryl Barton, Jim Guthrie, and from the Parks and Recreation Department, Doug Perrin, Tucker Schmidt, Mark Anderson, and Curtis Johnson. I would also like to thank Eclair Bakery and JJ's in the Village for their generous donation of sandwiches and dessert. If you happen to know any of these wonderful people mentioned above, please give them a hug, a pat on the back, or an attaboy. They deserve it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. And thanks for all the organization work and the coordination. So, anyone else who would like to come forward on this item? Item 7, community comments and suggestions. Okay, seeing none, we'll close community comments, and that will take us to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one motion unless there is a particular item on the agenda that a council member would like to pull for further discussion or an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on the consent agenda. And this evening, if you're following along on your agenda, those are consent items 8A through 8D. So I would ask at this time if there are members of the public who would like to come forward on any item on consent. This would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, We'll close public comment on the consent agenda, and we'll bring this back to the council. Gentlemen, what is your preference? Any items this evening? Okay. There are no items to be pulled. So with that, I'll entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8D. David.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion. Councilmember Fellows, did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. And a second by Councilmember Costello. Any discussion? And I think, do we have something in there to read this night, this evening, Tim?
We certainly do. Item 8D is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending Chapter 8.08 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code relating to the use and sale of fireworks.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 9, public hearings. We have none this evening. Item 10 is continued business. None. Item 11 is new business. 11A is review of the city's traffic impact study policy. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. At a previous council meeting, Mayor Pro Tem Arnold asked that we take a look at the traffic impact study policy. And just as a way of giving some background here, the policy was originally adopted in February 2000. It was revised in March of 2002. And just as a little background, a little history here, we are one of the only cities in the county that has a policy. The others usually go by and some of the details. We've identified some issues that have come up regarding the policy based on some of these projects that have come forward and some projects that are were being discussed for a consideration. The threshold for traffic studies. Right now it was set originally at 20 peak hour trips. Some think that that may be too low. Again, significant new information may not be obtained from some of these studies. And some of the funds on these studies may be better spent for mitigation measures. Sometimes it becomes a financial hardship on some small projects. They typically range between 10 and 12,000 for small projects. And, of course, there can be a substantial cost to smaller projects. And the studies may not be necessary at locations where impacts are already known. In the traffic model, we've identified 5 or 6 different locations. One of the ones that's most familiar is the Briscoe-Halcyon interchange, where we already know that there are problems that exist there. And doing another study may not provide any additional information. This was brought before the Traffic Commission. The alternatives they reviewed, again, was the trip generation threshold, where should that be? Should that be increased? Should it be decreased? Should it be a range? They looked at an example on fronting Grand Avenue. They thought that the threshold of 75 peak hour trips may be more appropriate for when a study is required. And then again, for low capacity streets, they thought that 20 peak hour trips might be the number that may be appropriate. They also suggest they looked at performing trip generation in-house. When we did the revision in 2002 to the policy, we went from ITE trip generation numbers to the SANDAG requirements. That was one of the major issues of that revision. We could use those numbers in-house to generate the trip generation from the project and then set the scope of the study from that. And then focus the study more on the improvements necessary and the cost to implement the improvements and, of course, the project's proportional share of those improvements. The recommendations that came from the commission included having the council consider a range or increasing the minimum from 40 peak hour trips. Right now it's 20. And they also looked at the different improvements at various locations. Again, trying to tailor the study a little bit more. They also thought that requiring an in-lieu fee for the smaller projects would be appropriate. With that, I'm going to conclude my presentation, Mr. Mayor, and be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Questions or comments on the
projects?
Does the scale slide a lot when you go from a 20 to 75 trip generation report, or is it based on the number of intersections studied? Or
it does, and the reason being is that the model needs to be calibrated and it needs to be balanced. So there's a lot more time involved in doing that sort of thing. When you have more trips like that, you have to go out further to make sure that the traffic model is balanced. So.
And at this point, the traffic model that we have, that we, I think we discussed, we own the data, and we, but we don't own the software. How much would the software cost so that we could either run these in-house or run them relatively easily?
I did have a chance to find that out, and I think I did mention it's about $10,000 to $12,000 for the Transcad traffic model program that the consultant uses to run our traffic model. So we could purchase that software.
The actual software isn't the prohibitive part of it. It's actually the manpower or the skill, let's call it, to make it operate.
That's correct, right. Okay.
All right, those were my questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Costello.
Don, if we were to go and look at some of these possible alternatives in terms of determining the necessity of a study based on location, do we have any specific areas in mind ahead of time that would be identified that would say this area would trigger a study, this would not? What would we use for the criteria to determine which areas are appropriate?
Well, I think my recommendation there would be to use our existing traffic model. The traffic model identified four locations, actually five, but we've already addressed one of them. Briscoe and Halcyon, of course, that area, West Branch and Grand Avenue. West Branch and Grand Avenue right here down the street, Grand Avenue and Briscoe Road, and then Grand and Halcyon. So I would start with those. Those are where the model says there's some deficiencies, so that areas, you know, projects that impact those intersections would probably be the first ones that I would look at.
And we'd want studies there.
Right. Well, I think those are the ones we already know are impacted. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that additional studies would tell us anything that we don't already know.
So we don't need studies there. Do we need studies?
We would need studies where those projects outside of those areas, those are the impacts I think we'd be looking for. So
those are the only areas of the city that we would say off the, you know, would not require a study. How about then if we were to increase the number of minimum trips from 20 to 40, for example,
mm-hmm.
Based on specific locations? How do we determine which locations might need the 40 and which might need the 20, and what criteria would we use for that?
Again, I mean, I think my recommendation there would be to look at the past projects that that have come into the city. And, you know, the smaller projects below 20, I don't think we have too much of a problem with. But I think when we originally set that number, we set it low because we wanted to have more traffic studies at that time.
Threshold could be raised. Explain a little bit further the second bullet, what that means. Maybe that'll help me.
The projects where we need improvements, we might be able to raise that threshold up because we already know that smaller projects will not have that big an impact on that particular intersection. So, for instance, if we're looking at Grand and Briscoe. We know that a small project there might not have an impact where it would require a large improvement. But if you have a larger project, then you're going to have some significant impact, and therefore we'd like to see what that would be.
Okay, thanks. And then I have one more question. There was a suggestion. It's right there in bullet number one. Consider 40 instead of 20, according to the Traffic Commission. And I noticed also that a couple of other cities have a threshold of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Could you kind of explain to me that is it because those other cities, San Luis and Ventura, are much larger than we are?
They're much larger cities, and they tend to have larger projects. And if they went down any lower, they'd be maybe inundated with projects. And then, again, they feel that 100 would be the number where it would kick that level of service into the next level. So they really want to focus on those type of projects, not the small ones.
Last question. In lieu fee, what would it be? It wouldn't be 10 to 12,000 because we're trying to save projects from spending that much money. So what would it be?
Right. Well, of course, it would be something less than that. I don't have a number for you this evening, but I think if you gave direction to find out what that would be, we could actually come up with something and present that to you.
All right. Thanks, Don. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Going back to your original bullets with the concern with the existing policy, I know that why I brought this up was Grand Estates, because when that project was coming forward initially, the concern was by the applicant, or actually the applicant's architect, was that they knew what some of the deficiencies were, and they were more inclined to want to spend the money to fix the deficiencies instead of pay for a traffic study to tell us that. And so I guess looking at the alternatives, I'm trying to figure out how we can satisfy, I guess, both the city, which would just ultimately our goal is to improve the circulation and get the improvements that are needed, and then the applicants obviously is to spend money where they actually see that there's a benefit to their project and mm-hmm. to the city as a whole. And in that case, it was a very good architect who I think his goal really was for the city and not trying to figure out how to save a buck. And so I guess what I'm looking at is there a way somewhere in here where we can have some subjectivity for maybe staff to determine? Because one of the problems that I still have with what we're looking at right now is the cut and dry numbers may work on some, and again, they may not work as well on other projects. And so what I'd actually like to do is be able to give you some leeway or have some kind of policy that might allow it to come to somewhere, whether it be go to the Traffic Commission or planning to discuss, you know, okay, we can look here. And I guess one of the things I'm looking at is I know when we see traffic studies,
the impacts are and how we can best address those, whether it be through a traffic study or whether it be through a payment of some in lieu fee. As I say, you know, the 40 was came about because we looked at some of the past projects and it kind of eliminates half of them. We could go to 30 and eliminate, you know, maybe less than that. But I think eliminating half of them would be a good starting place. So that's where the 40 came in. We looked at the numbers, the amount of studies that were performed from 2003 to 2007, in a recent. And then another thing that I would like to present at some point to you is the cost that the consultant was charging us for the original traffic study, traffic model. That was about $42,000 we spent on that. We had a 3-year contract, and there was 2 years after that where he was going to charge us $15,000 annually to take all of the projects that would happen during that year and completely revise the model and give us a new model. So just kind of those are kind of the numbers that we're looking at. It would be somewhere in that range of expense per year to actually, you know, update the model. And then taking that information, plugging it into the impact fees, and say if there's another project that we need to include in there, or revising the numbers of the cost, and then, you know, changing the fee somewhat so that we can keep up to date on a yearly basis or biannually, depending on the council's wishes. But I mean, I think that's where we would like to see it go.
I have several questions and issues with this, Don, but I think I'll wait until we invite the public to comment on this. This is not a public hearing, by the way, but It is a significant issue. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on this item, please feel free to do so. And once again, please be mindful of the three-minute rule and address the council as a whole.
Good evening. Terry Payne at 212 Miller Way. And I was wondering, and I have a concern with this project right here, if you've taken into consideration what this impact is going to be on Mason and LaPointe, and if that's been budgeted into your traffic analysis, or if you've already done something with regards to that. With that alternate design C, you're adding an impact of, on Saturday, I can see 1,000 cars going in and out there. If you've got a two-hour parking limit restriction on 133 spaces times two trips per car, that's going to be a significant impact on Mason and LaPointe, which we already have an impact in a traffic issue there.
Maybe we can keep that comment for the next item when we look at that project, and then we can perhaps address it at that time.
Well, if we're only given 3 minutes, I have some other concerns around that, this parking structure anyway, but I was just, my curiosity is, was that area addressed?
Traffic, the threshold could be higher in that situation or a major thoroughfare, and then on lower impacts where you would have something going in on a smaller street that was not designed to carry as much traffic, then that impact would be greater on that area, and the trip generation would slide back down to a lower number. We were just concerned that a straight number across the board didn't really reflect the needs of the community to some extent. Also, it was brought to our attention there was a project on El Camino Real, and the project was going to move from one place on El Camino Real to another place on El Camino Real, and what would have triggered the study was they would have more square footage and commercial space, and that square footage generated the potentially more trips, and those more trips generated a traffic study which puts their project out of the budget, and as a result there was no project, no improvement in the area because of it hitting that threshold and making the project more expensive than it's worth. So those were concerns that we would have such a low threshold that we would discourage what would have been positive commercial growth. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward on this item?
Mr. Mayor, honorable members of the council, my name is Howard Mankins, 200 Hillcrest Drive. I didn't come for this item, but I have a question, and it may not even pertain to what you're talking about, but I notice I go out Halcyon Road once a week to Black Lake, and I notice the traffic is getting heavier and heavier and heavier, and with the improvements the county's made, they're dumping more and more cars right into our city. I wonder if we know where they're going. Are they just going through us? And if they are, maybe El Campo Interchange would be the answer. I know there are money problems, but as far as knowing where we should be going, two other places, Halcyon, 227 and Branch, how many cars are being dumped in here just to pass on through going south? And then those three, Halcyon Road, 227, and the El Camino, El Campo Interchange. I think all of those areas that may be further out or beyond what you're trying to do here with your policy for improvements to the city, like subdivision or what have you. But they are, things are happening outside that we don't have a lot of control over. They're dumping cars into our area, which causes problems on our city streets. And maybe if we knew where that was, we could address it in some fashion. I don't have an answer for the addressing part, but I know those were problems. And LaPointe, the lady brought up LaPointe. We could save that one for the next one, too, as far as that goes. I'll save that one probably. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else here? This particular policy was intended to support our goal or objective, and that's to be good stewards of our circulation system. And that's essentially what we're trying to accomplish here. And as the, you know, the mix of development occurs or redevelopment within the city, our job is to monitor the impact and plan accordingly. And if you remember years and years ago when I guess when I was on the Traffic Commission and then later on the council and we first got our teeth into things like trip generation, and we started off with you know, I think it was Five City Center was a catalyst for switching from, I'm trying to remember the acronym, was it ATE?
ITE.
We were using that as a point of reference to index trip generation, and then we felt that that moving to Sandag was perhaps more realistic for our needs here in the city. Since then, if we look at what we've done with regard to trip generation, we've taken, I think, a step in the right direction, and that is that whenever possible, what we've attempted to do, and I think you hit on it in your comments, and that is we've gone to actual driveway counts. In other words, we've tried to capture empirical data here, not just reference from a manual. And that, I think that has begun to serve us well in terms of traffic planning overall. And so, I think you mentioned the term, Don, you said past project evaluation, or somebody did, I can't remember. But, I think those kinds of measurements are vital to making this a valid policy. With what we have left to monitor and plan for with regard to traffic impacts and trip generation and all of that, I think what we need to do is take our time and work through to try and get the most accurate portrayal of what the impacts truly will be, not grab them off of out of a Sandag manual. The other thing that is a trigger word for me in this policy, and it's not the first time you've heard it, is peak period. And I don't know how the rest of the council feels, but we don't have to look historically very far back to realize that the standard peak period formulas that we see in traffic studies do not apply here. In some cases, perhaps, but in a lot of cases, particularly in the high-volume generators, they don't. We find that, 6 to 6:30, Monday through Friday, is not the peak period. In many instances, the peak period is a Saturday afternoon. So, once again, I think that if we truly go to, as you've threaded it throughout this policy here, looking at in some cases if it's a prime area where there's potential for problems, that we do actual driveway counts, and maybe we do them for a week 24/7, and that gives us, I think, the goal of that traffic model was to do, I think, what the Mayor Pro Tem indicated a moment ago, and that was try and get an applicant or developer to a point where, particularly with the smaller projects, get them to a point where we help them determine the impact, perhaps without them having to go out and follow the traffic study template that's in this policy and hire a consultant to do it. Because I agree with some of the comments that have already been made, those traffic studies come back and I can't tell you how many I've looked at and how many, my colleagues can probably attest to the same thing. The majority of the data that's in there is boilerplate, and a lot of it is inaccurate, at least in my experience. So why spend the money on a traffic consultant if we can do some of that modeling in-house? And that brings us to the issue of the traffic model itself. I remember when that contract was let, we were supposed to be able to get to a point where we could do that modeling in-house without having to rely on a consultant. I remember that discussion. And so I'm not sure where we are now. If we need more software, I think we ought to get it. If we need to have someone on staff trained to use that software, I think we need to get there. I'm not sure how we do that, but I think we need to get there. I agree wholeheartedly, particularly on the smaller projects. Instead of an in-lieu fee, instead of a hiring a consultant to go out and do a study, let the applicant spend that money on mitigation for the direct impacts of that project, whatever it might be. If the impacts are minimal, then maybe a minimal in-lieu fee is appropriate so that we can use that money for mitigation elsewhere in the city. But, I recall the discussion that when new projects come online, we would be able to take that information, we would be able to take trip generation counts, plug them into that model, and out would pop impacts. And from that whole model or paradigm, we would then be able to make a determination on mitigation and how much it was going to cost, how much was needed, what type, so on and so forth. That was the whole beauty of this traffic model. So if we're not there yet, that's where I would like to see us go with this thing. So I'm out of breath. So with that, I'll open it up. Mayor Pro Tem, you brought this. Do you want to?
That's fine.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, that's or second.
Second. I'm sorry.
I agree that we don't want to hurry through this. I have no problem with taking a step back and looking at some more. I guess my goal is really what I talked about a little while ago, which is to make the process, I think, work. And I'm not sure that what we have right now is actually working. And so I'm a little, concerned that we randomly are picking a new threshold and if that would be, applied to people. And I understand that as well. And so that's why I really do think we need to look at this more seriously and say, if we're going to do more of this in-house, and maybe there's a fee there that could help to offset a partial position to do this, and we might find that we're so far ahead by being able to not use outside consultants. So my goal is to have a very flexible policy that is fair, and that's always a concern. When you don't have quantified numbers, then someone can say, well, do I need a study or not? But right now, I think what's happening is we're catching everybody in studies or the majority, and that's not what I want to do. I want to see the impacts fixed. And so I'm not comfortable going forward with where we are right now. I think we've addressed some of the concerns. It's now, or we've identified the concerns. Now the question is, how are we going to go forward from there? And so I think, I'm very comfortable with taking a step back and looking some more at where we are. I would like to see the traffic model as well be able to be used by our staff. I wasn't involved in the initial part, so I don't have the history of what was said and what our expectations were. But I've not heard very many positive references to that model because it doesn't appear that we've been able to use it for very much. And so I think it is probably a tool that, with maybe a little bit more work, we might be able to really utilize it to our benefit. So with that said, I think I'm on the same page as the mayor, which is we do need to look at this some more. Thank you.
Councilmember Costello.
I have to agree with what I'm hearing. I think that we probably want to change the thresholds. What's going to be appropriate, though, I'd be guessing right now to say 40 here, 60 there, 30 there. Are there certain parts of town that we don't need traffic studies because we know that there are going to be increases in the problems? I'm sure there are. But I think it's right to say we want to do this right and we should get it right. So I'm in favor of taking the time that's necessary to do it. I think we want to focus back on what we're trying to accomplish. We want to make sure that a situation like Mr. Ross was saying, a business comes forward that wants to translate from one location to another, and there's a marginal increase that hits a threshold, and now it's too expensive to do that. We want to avoid that when we can. Certainly, we want to look at what kind of traffic and circulation problems are going to be brought forward by projects, evaluate that, request the proper mitigation for the proper circumstances. The traffic impact study is a tool to help us do that. So let's make sure that we have that tooled properly. So I'm in favor of delaying any final resolution on this until we do have it right. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Fellows.
Well, I appreciate the work that the Traffic Commission has done on this so far, and staff also. Maybe I missed something, and I don't have a problem with delaying it either, but I don't get the feeling that the council, has really given any definite ideas other than make this a little better, make this a little better.
And usually it is the study or some empirical data that connects the dots between necessary project improvements, project impacts, and project improvements, and that usually is a study, but there are other ways of getting there, and I think what I'm hearing is the city's traffic model in and of itself can provide a lot of that empirical data. It doesn't necessarily have to be committing to substantial resources to a traffic consultant to provide that information, but absolutely, it can't just jump from project to, you know, project-generated improvements that are necessary. You have to actually line up the dots so that there is a direct connection and nexus between the two.
Yeah, I think I generally agree with what I'm hearing is that we really want to see better use of the model to establish both the individual impacts and the cumulative impacts, because my experience in looking at these, as we look at them project by project, is if we're going to actually, in the end, evaluate the project. In reality, the mitigations are always the same. They'll pay the fees. You know, there's no – it's not like in the end we go, okay, well, you've got to, you know, reduce the size of the project or something like that. So I don't think that there's a particular – no matter what the threshold is, that there's a particular – advantage to us in studying them project by project. I think we really want to look at this in much more of a sort of a macro sense and be spending whatever money we're generating on looking at the whole circulation system to establish the priorities and the projects, and also to look down the road and see the new problem that's going to be created by the cumulative impacts of maybe several small projects. And so really what I think we want to do is use this model, I'm thinking quarterly, although maybe that's too often, that we're going to look at what's on the books, and we're measuring traffic and how it's flowing right now and what's going to come down the line, and say, where's the next Briscoe? You know, where's the next problem? How, if we made this small improvement here, could we create a new place for traffic to get to the freeway other than that? And so I think I would rather see us – and I was thinking of the inland fee as the way to get there, but we're looking at the smaller projects paying into a fund that studies the whole circulation systems to help establish the priorities and projects as we're looking down the road. But we have to be willing to do that in the end. We have to. I don't think that we've ever had a report come back other than the original model, and had the model then run again and calibrate it again. I think we were supposed to do it yearly. And take a look at that on a basis so that we can look at projects going forward. I think of it as kind of like the pavement management plan. We really had a clear set of priorities based on the evaluations of the streets. And we could do a similar deal, but we do have to keep updating the circulation model because things change fairly quickly. Some things that we had control over and many things that we had no control over. So I think as a direction, I agree with you, we're not going to settle this tonight. But as a direction to staff that I would like to see, that we would come back with a way, we're probably going to have to set a new threshold, because I do think ultimately we do have to, just from a responsible standpoint, the bigger projects do have to do a study. But the smaller projects, that we would look at some way to fund these looks at the cumulative impacts and to the entire nexus, to the entire circulation system, and not just project by project, that we're really interested in evaluating the whole circulation system and not just one intersection away. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you brought that. And I thought that there was, at least from my understanding, there was, in the previous comments, several of us mentioned the nexus that that certainly it has to follow a progression. The project, its trip generation, its impact on the circulation system, its mitigation, and then the costs associated with that. The key was whether or not we had to pay a consultant to go out and do that, or whether we could ease the pain for some of the smaller projects by somehow or another programming our traffic model to accomplish that. But beyond that, looking at the cumulative impacts, Don, I think this is where the partnership with community development comes into play. I'm not sure to what extent they've had any impact on the manner in which the model was designed. But if we're looking at a particular circulation segment and we have a small project here and another one here, we've got to take a look at redevelopment. We have to take a look at new development that's also in that segment in commercial mixed use or whatever category is in that area so that we can forecast ahead. Maybe the single project isn't going to cause much pain. But let's look, two, three, four, 5 years down the road when the rest of the commercial mixed use, zoning fills in. Then what? Those are the kinds of things that I think a properly programmed traffic model can help us through. And so that's why I'm hopeful we can maybe put our heads together and come up with a tool that will be valuable for us and then have it be wrapped up in our impact policy. So those are my comments. Anybody else have anything? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, would you like to try a motion?
I was going to say, do we need a motion for this tonight, or do you have enough input?
Maybe if I could kind of recap what I heard and see if that's okay or if I left out something. I heard three main points. One, there seemed to be some consensus on that folks are agreeable or believe there needs to be a higher threshold, at least in some form. Councilmember Guthrie talked about there seemed to be support for this is doing a more global analysis study and periodic update of the model that wouldn't just look at a specific project, but periodically would kind of provide us an update on the overall traffic model and identify particular, the way I understood it, kind of particular intersections and things that are going to be problems in the future. And so we may have some recommendations on time frame. I think you said quarterly. Was that quarterly? So if you're flexible in that way, we may have some alternate recommendations. But that was the second thing. And then third, there seemed to be quite a bit of interest in staff assuming more role in the model, how we staff these things, whether it's coordinating with other cities or doing other stuff that maybe we could get more volume for them and get some reimbursement from that. I don't know, those are just examples. But I think what you're asking us to go back and do and see if there's some creative ways to make that work, because that certainly seems to be your expectation of where you'd like us to be going in that direction. So,
well, the other thing is to try as much as possible to deal with empirical data, actual counts, and take another look at how we define peak period.
I guess the only thing that I'm looking at, which I think is kind of encompassed by us doing more of it, is to also give then staff some flexibility on, whether or not, because where I have still the issue is if we're going to set it at a specific number where we're going to trigger, I think the large projects are really easy to understand, but it's the smaller to mid-size where, there is, we know what the nexus is between it, and so I wasn't trying to say that we're going to make recommendations they have to do something without them also agreeing. So when there's a meeting of the minds, I guess, between staff and the applicant, I'd like to be able to maybe see us do the improvements.
And I think if we go back to Councilmember Guthrie's suggestion about some periodic larger analysis of the overall model, I think the results of that will be able to target areas where we think are upcoming problem areas, and those will probably be information that we can use in determining that, you know, these particular areas are where we're going to need to focus on in terms of more detailed traffic studies, and these other areas probably aren't problem areas. And I think that step will help us with the next step of coming up with a variation of how we apply this.
Well, we can do this a couple of different ways. We can do a motion to continue this to a date uncertain. We can simply use this as staff direction. What would you recommend?
I think this is one of those classic provides direction to staff. And I think Steve recapped the general direction, and we'll bring something back when it's ripe to bring back.
Okay. So?
No formal action will be necessary.
Okay. Good. See what happens, Don, when you bring this traffic model thing forward? Okay, then we're going to move to 11B, and this is consideration of a lease agreement with PG&E for a five-acre city property at West Branch Street for a temporary park and ride lot.
The five-acre site is irregular in shape, predominantly level in the lower 3.5 acres. The upper portion of the site narrows down as Old Ranch Road continues into the Royal Oak subdivision. It's approximately 400 feet from the level portion up to the nearest Royal Oak residence, and it's approximately 300 feet across the Women's Center parking lot and building area to the nearest residence on Vernon and Larkmont. A proposal was received via Tom Swem, a real estate broker, on behalf of PG&E for a park-and-ride facility that would serve the Diablo Canyon retooling that is programmed for winter of 08 and winter of 09. And with that, we have progressed into some preliminary discussions with Tom Swem to determine the feasibility physically of the site to accommodate up to 400 cars for 24-hour-a-day period, relatively low turnover use to accommodate the working shifts that would be otherwise on the freeway all the way to Avila Beach and Diablo Canyon. This would be one of several park-and-ride facilities. I believe that there are others proposed in Central North Coast and North County, but this would serve the bulk of South County. Certainly, the concept of accommodating 400-car parking on this property during the next 2 years will create some traffic concerns. Two of the intersections that Don just mentioned, West Branch and Grand Avenue and Briscoe-Halcyon, would be affected by traffic attempting to access this site. One of the considerations that was important to even begin the negotiations was to determine the time period. This is a winter use activity extending from December through April of this year, December through April of next year, and then December of next year through April of 09. It is also with some degree of control by PG&E with the shuttle bus operation. So the activity at the lot would be from 3:30 in the morning to roughly 7 a.m. and same in the afternoon. So it can avoid what would typically be peak hours. There would be some overlap of peak hour potential congestion particularly at the Briscoe Halcyon intersection during the weekend, since this would also be used in the weekend. The studies have not yet been conducted. The use permit has not been processed, but the proposal is to the City Council whether or not you would consider a temporary use lease. The Recreation Center lessor is willing to forego any income. They feel that the improvements that might be involved, the leveling of the land, the surfacing for temporary parking purposes, the drainage, would be beneficial. There are still issues regarding the expense that the city might incur related. We've estimated conservatively that the $100,000 would cover the surfacing and grading. There are some lighting, signage, and traffic management activities that may be involved. And then depending upon what the Planning Commission might determine would be appropriate levels of improvement, if there were bus shelters or pavement or things of that nature, the cost could certainly escalate and the city's incentive to lease the property could be affected. We're bringing this matter to the council's attention. Tom Swim is present, a representative from PG&E is present to answer questions, to get direction as to whether or not you're interested in interim use of this property prior to the Recreation Center. The Recreation Center is in a pattern of fundraising, and probably for the next 3 or 4 and maybe even 5 years will be in that process. They hope to commence construction as soon as there is a committed solution to the Briscoe Halcyon interchange upgrade, maybe concurrent with the construction of the upgrade on the interchange constructing the Recreation Center. But that does not appear feasible within the next 2 years, so this is an opportunity to make use of an otherwise vacant city property. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and respond. And again, the representatives from PG&E and Tom Swim are present.
Thank you. Questions for Rob? Clarifications at this time?
Just so we understand that the access for this, the north and south access that people are going to drive, are going to be the Briscoe's northbound off-ramp, and then they would be getting off at the Halcyon on-ramp and circling all the way around from the north. Would that be expected?
If they were coming from Pismo Beach area, they could come in a variety of ways with the surface streets of West Branch, or they could come down the freeway to Halcyon, loop under Briscoe, and access West Branch Street, progress to the Old Ranch Road intersection. Alternatively, they could come down to Grand Avenue, which is a full interchange. They could access West Branch via Grand Avenue. That can be problematic during the day, but during the times that most of the traffic would occur, they would probably have no problem crossing Grand Avenue at West Branch.
All right, thank you.
I had a question, Rob. The shift changes?
Yes.
How many cars roughly per shift?
I believe that they're programming the turnover of 400 cars in each shift. So the and PG&E representative might be able to clarify this. They provided a brief description of the turnover times in the attachment in the proposal from Tom Swim. Day shift and night shift starting at 3:30 in the morning and ending at 5 a.m., a total activity of 400 cars, the bulk of which would be in the 4 to 4:30 period. Obviously, the shuttle bus arrangement from Diablo Canyon can control and they can give specific direction to contract whether we could park that number of cars. PG&E is more able to respond to the shift change control levels and how many cars might occur at each period and what happens during the turnover period when one shift is coming and the other shift is leaving. That was a concern, whether we might have 800 cars on the road at one time, an overlap period. But it appears that they can avoid the overlap of coming and going. And PG&E might respond to that in more detail.
Okay. Perhaps we we could invite PG&E to come up for a moment and might be a few questions.
Hi, I'm Lynn Mensinger. I'm the facilities lead for the steam generator replacement project that will happen on the first unit in January, starting in actually February of next year, and then the following in late January of 2009. So if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer. One that I hear came up was, are we going to have 800 vehicles there at one time? And the plan is really for 400 vehicles total, 200 from day shift, 200 from night shift. And at the given time, you will have 400 vehicles there because of the turnover of you know, people coming in, getting on a bus, going to the project. When that bus gets there, it'll be in a position to load up people from the plant and then bring them back to the parking lot. And then they will disperse, you know, from the parking lot at that time. So, you know, during the day, you're going to have 200 vehicles there. And at that turnover time in the evening and in the morning, you'll have the 400 vehicles.
Will the times be staggered so that the 200 vehicles, the workers in those 200 vehicles are all getting off at the same time, and the 200 that are coming in are all starting at the same time, or will there be some sort of a sliding?
There is going to be a sliding because there are two different contractors that we plan on utilizing the space for. For instance, I'll try to get the times as close as possible, 5:30 in the morning will be the one contractor, their start time at the plant, and the next contractor will start at 6 o'clock in the morning. So we have that half-hour difference, and we're estimating roughly that that's, you know, a 50-50 break between them. So if you've got 200 employees coming in for the morning shift, it'll be 100 from one contractor and 100 from another. It may be a little bit higher one contractor than the other because we don't really know where all the people are going to be staying and which people are going to be utilizing this right at the moment. But we'll finalize that as we go forward.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm looking at matrix, the chart, or the table, I guess, on the last page of our staff report. And do you have that in front of you by chance, this one?
Yes.
We don't have that for the overhead, do we, Rob? I don't know if we can blow that up or not. Problematic intersection. And so if I'm looking at this correctly, here is where we see the total impact on departures, where you're pretty much at capacity. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we're looking at between 6 and 7 a.m., 200 vehicles leaving that lot.
That is correct.
Okay. And then between 6 and 7 p.m., we have another 200 vehicles that would be leaving the lot.
That is also correct.
Okay. During the departure of those vehicles, would there be, I'm looking at the chart above now on arrivals, there would be staggered arrivals. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, you won't have quite as much impact with the arrivals as you will with the departures. Because you're going to have, it's all based on what time people come to work more than anything else. And we will try to dictate when people show up at the lots based upon bus departures.
Okay. Any other questions for PG&E while he's at the podium? Yes, Chuck?
Lynn, I can think of a couple of benefits to the city, to the community of this plan. I can certainly think of two or three negatives. What problem does this solve for you if we were to go ahead with this?
Well, we have two items that we have to deal with. The first item is under our EIR that was given to us through the California Public Utility Commission requires us to reduce our trips into the plant by 50% for the project. So we have to meet that mitigation, number one. Number two, we have about 1,200 people additional going to be on site from a normal outage, roughly. And we do not have...
I'm sorry, 1,200 more than a normal outage?
That is correct.
Holy cow.
1,200. And we have a very heavy outage, this outage right now that's going on, and the parking is just packed. In combination with that, we've had to utilize part of the parking areas because we just don't have the space to put the new steam generators, to put all the equipment and tools and things that we need to do the project. So we've taken up parking lots to accommodate that laydown because we just don't have the space. So we've got twofold situation, the mitigation and also the loss of parking that we need to put somewhere else. And so, you know, to meet both of those items, we looked at off-site parking.
Thanks.
Okay, any other questions at this time? Okay, thank you. Once again, this is not a public hearing, but we would invite any member of the audience that would like to come forward on 11B. If you so choose, this would be an opportunity for you to do so.
Good evening again. Terry Fowler. We're at 212 Miller Way. You know, we pay great homage to the fact that we have a historic village here. We want to stay, and I've heard so many people say, Avila, well, isn't there someplace where they can have two or three stops, maybe reduce this to 100 parking spaces, make another stop someplace else and pick up the people in Grover and one in Avila? I mean, that's how a bus route's done. Why can't this be done the same way? And we're sitting here talking this evening about, you know, 400 parking or trip generation on one shift, and then we're talking about the next thing on item is a parking structure with 130 spaces. We already got an impact here in the village. Whether it's in the middle of the night, do we really want that kind of impact in the middle of the night coming and going in residential areas? I don't think I would, and I don't think I want to live here in the village with that going on.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Good evening, Mayor, Councilmember, members. My name is Tom Swem, and I'm the commercial broker that was given this assignment to try to find some off-site parking for PG&E. I've done a lot of work with PG&E over the last few years as far as leasing different facilities and whatever, and when I received the call from San Francisco, the call started that, well, those other deals were pretty straightforward, but guess what we've got for you? So I was able to get some really good transactions and a couple that were kind of challenging, that these were. That being said, I was quite excited about the opportunity when they told me what they were trying to accomplish. And that accomplishment that they were going to try to effect was to have a pretty dramatic trip reduction of a lot of people that were going to be moving about. The park and ride concept kind of serves so many different ideas and concepts in terms of the overall flow of traffic. I've been very active in San Luis as their chairman of their parking access committee for the downtown, and so I've been kind of living and breathing for about the last 10 years parking and access for San Luis. And when this came up, I went to work to try to find out where I might be able to find these facilities. Some of the types of things that we found were existing and or antiquated shopping centers that we might be able to utilize, something that was already built, constructed. And a number of other types of facilities that were similar to that, including some of PG&E's existing owned land and how we might be able to utilize that. Through that whole process of research for the South County, which was one of the focused areas because there are so many people that either live in here in the South County that are going to be commuting into Diablo or that will be coming in for this particular outage, we researched a number of different possibilities, one of which was county-owned land within a few hundred feet of this particular location. And through that discussion, we were referred to the city of Arroyo Grande on this particular site. The concept that we've brought forward through the proposal is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but just to kind of paint the picture the best I can, was that this is a site that's somewhat dedicated and or aligned for a parking lot sometime in the future. And this particular small period of time, 2 5-month periods, would give the opportunity to develop your parking lot up front. The county wasn't that excited about developing theirs, and they said, why don't you talk with Rob and see if there's the possibility of this possibly occurring for the city of Arroyo Grande. It could, you know, get the capital necessary to get something off the ground for you. So that's where we've ended up.
Right. So what would the alternatives be?
Well, one of the alternatives, most specifically, was a county-owned property in and around St. Patrick's School. Right next door, yeah. They had the above lot and the lower lot, and that I was triggered into researching that because of their annual pledge drive that they do with their little fair that they park on all of the different county properties right there. And I said, wow, there's already parking lots there, and then the county mentioned that they might like to have long-term parking lots developed there at some point in time. Perfect. That could be a match. And, again, was referred over here. The second and third possibilities have been, again, the Five Cities Drive shopping center, but they're fairly impacted already, so that wasn't really workable. There aren't any really shopping centers with pre-existing parking facilities that could facilitate up to 400 extra cars, if you will. So we were kind of delegated or relegated to finding some place that we could build economically that would make sense for this particular project.
Well, since you brought is that all your questions? Okay. Since you brought it up, are you talking about where the factory outlets are mm-hmm. in Pismo?
Yes.
I think there have been several occasions where, even on the weekends, where you have a high volume of traffic in and out of there, you know, it's not uncommon to see an RV show or a bunch of the, you know, car dealers get together and move their cars in, and the parking lot accommodates that, plus additional customers that are there for the outlet center as well. Did you really look closely at that as an alternative?
We had discussions with them, but the weekend type of a function as opposed to 4 months 24/7 was somewhat of a different animal in terms of which they would be more interested in participating with. To have Rancho Grande and two or three other of the car dealers do a car show there is one thing for a weekend, which would generate activity for the shopping center versus what you might call dark storage. You know, the cars are going to be put there and then they're going to just sit there without anybody milling about and potentially shopping. That wasn't real exciting for them. So, although we did not get to a point of drafting proposals for them, we weren't encouraged to do so. No.
Okay. I'm just wondering what their attitude would have been if there were some discussion about, you know, a similar financial arrangement that could be shared among the businesses.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
Do you have a question? Go ahead.
Tom, if we say no and you have a hard time finding any other spaces, and if the other communities say no, what are the – are there legal ramifications to them – to PG&E not being able to park the cars to meet the criteria of the EIR? Will it end up that there will be some government intervention to create parking mandated?
Good question. That's not been brought up at all. I've been fairly successful in finding different areas to at least have discussions with. And initially thinking that we've got a year to package this sounded like, oh, no, finalized.
Thank you. That's all.
It sounds also from what you're saying is if we were to say no, it sounds like the county was actually trying to, I don't know if do us a favor, but in a sense they were saying, you know, we'd rather you give the money to the city since they're looking to do an improvement here anyways, and if the city doesn't want it, then we may be interested. So there's a chance, if I'm hearing correctly, we could end up with the impact and no improvements if it ended up going on the county land.
Well, I'd certainly explore that as a possibility. I liked the concept when I spoke with Karen Madalena with the county. It sounded more of a win-win scenario. They didn't really need the use, although they would be interested in exploring it. That being said, it would be pretty much the same procedure to come back through you folks to work with your community development department to make it work as well, because it's the same location. It's just different ownership. So that's another location that we would give consideration to. Your guidance certainly is going to be really well listened to, if you will, in terms of whether or not this site's going to work for us. We think that it would work quite well. We went to a reasonable effort to take a look at truly what the trips and times for those trips were going to be to mitigate that. I mean, just the concept of having 400 cars at one place at one time sounds pretty gigantic until you take a closer look at the overall trip schedule and see that, you know, 25 of them are coming in the morning very, very early, another 100 very, very early, and et cetera. So there will be times certainly that there'll be some impact. We would hope that that would be considered in the offset of those, all those cars being driven up and down the streets as well all the time, because they're going to go to work one way or the other, and they're going to park somewhere, and we don't know other than that where we're at.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions at this point? Councilmember Costello?
I think I'd like to ask staff, going back and following up on the question that Ed just asked, if we said no and the county said yes and they came forward and worked with the piece of property that's adjacent to ours, exactly what inputs or controls do we have? Do we have anything to say about it?
I think that that would be a cooperative effort that we would certainly ask the county to consider the same issues that we're considering. If we said no, I think that we would be reluctant to encourage them to say yes if it's unacceptable to the city. But are they a legal entity that can make an independent decision and an environmental determination? Yes, they are. They could decide to use county land, I think, without the city's permission.
A slightly different spin on that. Although there is sovereign immunity with regard to most issues, this is certainly not a county function. This has nothing to do with the county's governmental function. It's truly, although it's an accommodation to PG&E, it's an enterprise. And I think the city would take the position that a use permit would be required from the city. Now, of course, compelling the county to do that is not an easy thing, but I think the county would be cooperative in light of the fact the impacts are going to be felt in Rio Grande, not in any unincorporated portion of the county. So although I think Rob's right, if push came to shove, it would be a fight and an interesting issue.
Anyone right down the street here, and there will be some impact. But, you know, I feel the benefits far outweigh for a temporary thing like this to not be considered. The city has a lot to gain. There's a piece of property that you've been waiting to do something with. You can sort of mold it to fit what they need. Let me tell you that PG&E has been a very good neighbor. They've been very good to this county. I can remember when over 50% of the county budget was paid by PG&E through taxes, and the city benefited in the same manner. And 10% of the power they produce is for the state of California. And I think that, you know, it's time we sort of paid them back a little bit by cooperating. I don't think that the impact is that great. It's temporary. It's not like they're asking this for the rest of their lives. I think that PG&E has spent a lot of money in our county, and economically we will benefit from the additional business from the people who will live in our area. I know some people already are moving in for what is happening out there now. They shop here, they eat here, they buy gas here. I think that we can easily afford to put up with the inconvenience for two times, and they've done everything possible. I'm sure staff could work out and with them that they could do it. I know I'm willing to put up with that for what impact it may have on our businesses, just to be a good cooperative city to the PG&E power plant. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Hang on just a second. Let's finish the public comment. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. There has been a lot of editorial comment in the local paper and about the CO2 and greenhouse gases expended
by vehicles down on the sand dunes and down on the dune part. A lot of different takes, different ways on what should be done. I think this is an excellent opportunity for the city to step forward and take a lead in providing a space that will significantly reduce the amount of miles commuted by people who are going to commute those miles, whether they're on a potentially green-friendly bus that might run on electric energy or a hybrid-type bus, instead of driving a lot of cars that pollute significantly. Right now, because of a lot of different issues, there are literally millions of miles of forced commuting a year by residents of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties to get to work from where they have to live. And anything that can be done to mitigate those miles is going to improve our environment. I think we need to, as citizens of the world, come forward and take that step and provide spaces like this so that we are lessening the impact of automobile pollution, especially
on and be a, end up being a permanent parking lot. And I guess what I'm asking is there going to be a provision in there that's going to have a deadline?
The short answer is yes. The longer answer is the use permit will have specific conditions. It doesn't preclude additional proposals coming forward, but it is only with the permission of the approved lease of the recreation center that this proposal is being considered for this specific time period. Any extension of that would require their additional permission in addition to the council's.
Okay. Any other member of the public who would like to come forward on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment.
Mr. Mayor, I had those two questions I want to ask Mr. Swim.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and start us off?
I don't think I've ever seen the Walmart parking lot full, not that I shop there, nor have I seen the Kmart parking lot full. Have you spoken with those two concerns?
I have not.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Well, as I see it, there are obvious two benefits, and that would be the reduction in air pollution. I'm not sure if it's really a substantial, with all respect to Mr. Ross, a substantial reduction. I don't know how we'd find out, but I agree that it would probably lessen air pollution, lessen trips, and it improves the site for the future use of the courthouse, the sports facility, which eventually will be built, and it will be a great benefit to the community. The negatives, in my estimation, are that it concentrates traffic and parked cars in our community, and unfortunately for us, we have a couple of real difficult sites as far as traffic goes that bracket that parking area. One is, of course, Briscoe Halcyon. The other is down in the Village, where there's some very, very narrow opportunities to get off of the frontage road and onto Branch by the Shell station. It's just it really is a bad spot most of the time, in my opinion. The other thing is this plan will, of course, once the neighbors hear about it, going to be up in arms over it. It will disturb their peace during the time of the nights when the folks are coming in to park there. And the other thing that it just occurred to me is when I'm near the off-ramp, on-ramps of the Avila Beach on-ramps, where folks get off the freeway and go down to the plant, when it's quitting time, those folks are hell-bent on getting home. And I don't see how we'd control the folks that leave, get off the bus, get in their cars, and burn rubber to get out of the parking lots to get home and watch their favorite TV show, especially with hundreds at one time. I think it's better. It would be better for our community to spread the burden, maybe a little bit over in Kmart Shopping Center parking lot, Walmart lot, and perhaps some at this location. But I'm not comfortable with 400 cars there. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And this is a balancing act, I think. We've got a project that's going to go forward at PG&E that's going to impact our area. no matter what happens, unless they close the plant between now and 2008. I don't see that. 4 to 4:30, 75 would be 2.5 to 3 per minute. Arriving with departure time several hours later, I think that this is probably going to produce an acceptable level of interference in the city. The benefits of getting the cars off the freeway and reducing air pollution are significant. I'm not sure that you're going to be able to spread the parking out through Kmart and the Five City Center parking lots and get enough parking spaces that are going to be available for the purposes of this. And that being said, I think that this is probably a project that we should take advantage of. The advantage is to develop the property for future use and to get vehicles off the freeway are reasonable. I'd ask that if we have maybe a little bit of flexibility in the terms of the lease, that if we see we may need to adjust the hours just a bit, if there's some space to work with PG&E to maybe spread this out just a little bit more than we see it, if that's possible, I'd like to see that. But I can support this.
Councilmember Guthrie.
I think if we were, I think what is probably the only location in the South County that can handle all 400 cars at once. I mean, maybe the county right across the street could, but I when I looked at this, I thought, where is another place, somebody else's backyard, where we could put this big an impact and maybe have less? And I can't, even at Factory Outlet, which actually would have a significant impact at 4th Street and the little hook ramp there getting on the freeway, I don't believe could handle 400 cars in a single location. You might be able to handle 150, 200 there max, and you would have to find another location then. And I understand, I think that could be done logistically, but I understand why PG&E would like to locate these one or two or three locations throughout the area instead of 10, which is what you would take if you started splitting all of these up. So I do think we have, as a community member, not just working with PG&E, but working with our entire community, that we do have something of an obligation to try to make this work out. That said, I actually don't think that the $150,000 is worth the pain here. At 6 o'clock in the evening, it's going to be really ugly at Briscoe and Branch. It just is. We almost certainly would have to close the left-hand branch just to keep people from trying to get on the freeway there, force them all the Camino Mercado, and go through that entire at 6 o'clock at night. 6 in the morning, we may have noise problems, but we're really not going to have a traffic problem. So I guess just sort of in conclusion there, it's not really about the improvement to the lot or the $50,000 in income to the city. It really is that I'd really like to see a little more of look at the possibility of other locations. This is not from a traffic standpoint, this is not a good location. And I would before we take this hit, which is what I think it really is, that we would want to see further evaluation from somebody about the possibility of other locations. If, in fact, there are no other good locations, I would be prepared to approve this. There's some pluses in it.
I think that the impact would be relatively minimal for a short period of time. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, I see a lot of opportunities with the parking for the Strawberry Festival and some of the other events that go on, the ability to have this lot. I see this as a much longer time frame for a benefit to the city than just the 2 years. Realistically, we're probably not going to see groundbreaking there for 5 years. So the upside long term and the potential for maybe some other special events to take place there, I can see as a real possibility. The one discussion about, you know, possibly Walmart, because the center there, I would agree completely with Councilman Fellows that a good portion of the time that parking lot is fairly empty. The one of the issues, though, is this is actually during the holiday season, at least for the first month of each of the leases, and at that time the parking lot's actually very full. So that would not be a viable option. So I can definitely support this. I see the benefit. I don't think it's all about dollars and cents. Would like to ensure that if we were to do a lease that our costs are covered. I'm a little concerned with if we're going to say right now it looks like it's $102,000 to develop and then the additional cost to get to $112,000, that whatever the cost is to the city, that would be reimbursed. I do think there probably are some options, whether it be having someone from PG&E to stop traffic from going up maybe Rancho Parkway or Rodeo in the morning or evening to make sure that the people weren't kind of sightseeing and that they were funneled out. Whether or not there might be some need for additional traffic control, but I don't think these are insurmountable, and I think it would work real well for us as a city. So I can support it. I could also support it being a scaled back project with, say, 200 cars there and 200 somewhere else. But I do see this as an opportunity to do something that I also believe that there is a real benefit to the carpooling. I think we want to talk about the higher density projects. We want to talk a lot about carpooling, and here's a great opportunity for us to do some. And so I'd hate to see us pass it up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Rob, a couple of quick questions. If I understand the concept of this operation, this location is intended to serve which communities in South County besides those who might live in Arroyo Grande that would be going to PG&E? Who else would be, what other communities would be driving to this location?
The PG&E might answer that better by telling you where additional park and ride lots might exist. If people are commuting from Santa Maria, Napomo, Napomo Mesa, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, I'm sure that the contractors would be advised to use this park and ride lot shuttle in. I think if they're living in Avila, San Luis Obispo, North Coast, North County, obviously they would be intercepted by similar park and ride lots in other communities, assuming that PG&E is successful in creating them. And it sounds like they would need at least three such facilities to
here south of the plant, and then again north of the plant, which would be the San Luis and North County areas, would be going into San Luis Obispo. And right now we're looking at two lots, just so that everybody's clear on that. The lot in San Luis Obispo would hold roughly 500 to 550 cars, and that would get us, you know, roughly 900 vehicles, which would more than meet our mitigation.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm having some real problems with this proposal. And specifically because of the observations that Councilmember Guthrie made, I concur with them wholeheartedly on the issue of air quality and the whole carpooling thing. If you were to look at a parking lot operation of 400 cars plus buses in a condensed area, if we were to look at that kind of traffic impact associated with any other project, we would have to do an EIR. And part of that EIR would be impacts of air quality. And while if we were to take a macro look at this in terms of reducing trips on the main line, yes, there would be an advantage. But in terms of air quality generated within the city of Arroyo Grande, I believe the impacts would be negative, not positive. The discussion about, or the question that I asked with regard to this particular location serving particularly areas north of us, Grover and Pismo, the notion of those communities actually driving south away from the location to come into the city and concentrate traffic here in this city, in my mind, doesn't make much sense. I believe that there was a member of the audience that mentioned the possibility of a route. I think that's doable. The fact that that you haven't found another location that could accommodate all of this traffic doesn't mean that you can't find a few other locations that could diffuse this particular concentration and at least take some of the burden off of this location. I wouldn't mind a reduced number at this location on a trial basis, which brings me to the issue of the lease. And that is, I would not want to lock in anything at that location for a two-year period of time. And I understand the fiscal obligation and investment that PG&E would make in the site. That's an issue that would have to be resolved. But, this council has had a number of discussions recently about the activity at Five City Center. We can see right now in the evenings queuing up that hill to the shopping center. And now we're going to impact that intersection with additional cars. I cannot in good conscience approve a concept like that. The other issue, and this one that probably a public hearing would have been more beneficial, that's my take on it, because this has a potential in my mind of affecting a good segment of our community. So I'm not prepared to move forward with this tonight. I would not be comfortable with approving something, particularly when we already have a problematic intersection. And I understand the good work that PG&E has done and the cooperation that we've had with you has been excellent. That's not the issue here. The issue here is, I think, trying to come up with a better plan that serves this community better than this. And the only thing I can think of would be to find some of those small satellite areas that could, again, diffuse this circulation, this number of trips into our city. And if a bus had to schedule, two or three stops between here and Avila, so be it. I think it's doable. And or I'd least like to see more work done to see if we can come up with a viable plan. But as we sit here this evening, with all of the discussion and all of the issues that we have had related to that intersection, I'm not going to add additional cars to an already problematic intersection when we have an opportunity to perhaps come up with a better plan. So those are my comments. I'd like to send this back to the drawing board and see if we can come up with a better arrangement. I'm not comfortable with this at all. So any other comments, questions?
Mr. Mayor, I do have one clarification that I'd like to have of staff. Rob or Steve, just in case this does go forward in the future in some iteration, will the ARC have a chance to look at this and talk about landscaping, trees, and so on?
Yes. Once again, the process we proposed here was just to get some initial feelings from the council, whether the council supports the concept. Then it will require a conditional use permit, and that would be a public hearing. The neighbors would be notified. It would go through all the channels. We just did not want to invest in all that until we knew that at least the council felt about the concept or supported the concept.
Thanks. Okay. I don't know if we're going to end up with a motion or something, but I think some of the direction that I would like to see come back, and I don't know whether it comes back, if this comes back as a public hearing in a CUP or in another informational item, is that when we look at what the, like if we were doing an ARR, we would require alternative proposals, and we're only hearing that maybe it wouldn't work out at these other alternatives. So I'd like to see a more thorough discussion on why this is the only location that would work out. Also, the idea of using satellite, I realize there's logistical problems, but I'd certainly like to hear what those are. And also, if in fact we did do even some portion of this, what would the traffic control mitigations, I think that's what I'd like to see us do going forward, is this is kind of the home run. I don't think the home run's going to work. So I think we're going to have to see some base hits here and see if we can get this done.
What I'm hearing, though, is there's some receptivity to maybe renegotiating this to have some form of lease and park ride if it was scaled down and they were able to identify some alternate sites that could transfer some of the traffic and, as you say, identify some things to mitigate the impacts. I think I heard that, or at least it would be considered if we come back with a smaller number of vehicles.
Well, that coupled with the fact that I would not want to get locked into a two-year lease where if it did turn sour on us, you know, we have no escape. And
I got that in my notes, too.
So, but I'm, you know, I think we take another look at this, that logistically it could work out. I mean, you can look at a number of different parking lots between here and Avila that are underutilized. And I think that if we do a good faith effort, we can come up with some kind of an arrangement that will make this less painful for everyone. So you need a motion on this? Who would like to try one?
Steve. My basic concern would be the city's
permission to... I'd make a motion we direct staff to go back and renegotiate with PG&E to look at both the concept of several alternative sites throughout the South County, that they review the possibilities of a call it a looser lease, for lack of a better word, and also look at what the traffic control mitigations that are possible that would reduce what whatever parking might take place here would reduce the impacts of that, both in the neighborhood and specifically on Branch and in front of the Five Cities shopping center.
Second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second discussion.
I guess the majority of that motion I agreed with. I do have a problem with the lease piece, even though I understand your concerns. I think if I was PG&E, that would be a deal killer. I don't see how they could even begin to go forward with a project and then have us say, guess what, this is not working for us, and so you're going to have to go away. So I think that piece of it.
I guess I said that I was directing staff to review the possibility, and I think that's exactly the discussion would take place, that maybe it can't be done, and then maybe it can't be done. I'm not directing staff to go back and say that this, you know, that has to be a total out in the lease, that they can park there for a week, and if we don't like it, they're gone. But I do want to review what the possibilities there would be if in fact there was a traffic emergency created by this.
I think we can come up with some alternatives, and it's up to them if they're meets their needs.
Still in discussion. I'm going to add some additional comments during the discussion, and that is that if it's okay with the motion maker, I think from a public relations standpoint and from an efficiency standpoint, the utilization of public transportation for a project like this would be huge for PG&E to be a champion of that. So I would not want to lose sight of that, and I would want to, if it's okay with the motion maker, include consideration of that in as we relook at this, you know, re-examine this.
I'll certainly add that consideration. I'll just point out that Diablo is at the very, very end of a very long access point out to Avila for it to fit any public transportation system. It really is the sort of the beauty of this park and ride is it's one destination to another destination. But certainly, let's take a look at how SCAP might tie in with it. But
that's true. But you can get out to Avila Beach, and there can be, you know, there's a Avila trolley, there's a shuttle, there's all kinds of strategies
we could put in place.
Yeah. So just the creative use of public transportation, I think, is something that has not been looked at here as closely as it possibly could have. So if that's okay with the motion maker and the second.
Absolutely.
Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thanks. How are you guys doing? Take a break. You want to charge ahead?
I'm fine. We're down to the
Okay, that'll take us to 11C, consideration of La Pointe parking lot structure and feasibility study.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. We've been discussing a number of traffic and parking related issues this evening. One thing we're very proud of in terms of our effort as it relates to parking, really a lot of the credit goes to, most of the credit goes to Rob Strong here, and that's, you probably noticed in some of our neighboring communities lately, many of them are struggling with problems of how to install much needed parking into their downtown areas with out properties to very easily accommodate those. We have a community that clearly does not have a severe parking problem at this time, but we also feel very confident that based on our projections, we will have a problem if we do not do anything to resolve that problem in the future. And so this is the time to address it, and Rob's been working on a number of planning efforts to develop long-range parking plans. And key to this effort has been the site behind the council chambers here, which was targeted for some time because it provides a key strategic property for future parking. It is one of the very few undeveloped parcels within the village core that can accommodate parking. With the parking design group to prepare a feasibility study on both initial surface parking as well as the potential for future multi-level parking at the site purchased by the redevelopment agency on La Pointe Street. And the purpose of that study was to determine the optimal area for parking, given the flexibility to be able to potentially add a future second level and maybe even third level. With this information, staff can then proceed to identify the remaining area left on the La Pointe Street frontage available for a proposed mixed-use project, which would allow the staff then to proceed with issuing an RFP and selecting a developer as originally proposed by the staff. Now, this proposal combines the new lot with the existing parking area behind the City Council chambers, opportunities to coordinate with the neighboring property to the west was also considered, discussed with the property owners, and included in the study as alternatives. Now, at this time, I would like to introduce David Vogel from the Parking Design Group. Ask David to come up and present to you the results of the study. And when he completes his presentation, then I'd like to make just a few final comments summarizing staff's recommendations before we open it up to questions, but please feel free as we go through to ask questions.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Mayor Ferrara and City Council members for inviting us to present this. Thank you, staff, also for your assistance in putting this together. As Steve mentioned, we were commissioned to take a look at a conceptual design feasibility study. Parcel property, approximately 147 feet wide by 240 feet in length. Some of the design criteria that was given to us was considerations to vehicular access, pedestrian movement, trying to work with the topography while keeping the cross slopes adequate for parking, et cetera. So we took a look at what we felt were three of the best concepts for the site. And by the way, we have extra books here if anyone needs a book to follow through. But we're going to kind of work through these concepts backwards, if you will, from concept C to B to the preferred concept A. And concept C, which is shown on page 30, again, as Steve mentioned, we were working from the idea of creating a surface parking lot initially that would lend itself to future expansion vertically for additional spaces as needed in the future. And as you can see on page 30, the solution there would be to create a surface lot that would need some excavation and actually cutting into the hillside there, which would require a retaining wall that, as you can see, kind of goes around the northerly, I guess, half of the site. Efficiency wasn't as desirable. On page 23, we've got concept B, which also would require some excavation of the site, but would allow access off of LaPointe Street and also utilize the existing surface lot that's out behind Chambers Building right now as kind of a natural grade to create the ramps, the vertical circulation ramps for the vehicles, and then stack on top of that for easy forming and for the future expansion. Again, this would have been kind of difficult for the initial surface lot construction, and so we proceeded on to concept A, which is more of a stair step design that worked with the topography and kind of just worked its way right up the hillside. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Warren, the other principal of the parking design group, and he can go into a little bit more detail on concept A.
Thanks to you all. Again, like David said, as we what came out of the study on the structured parking scenarios is that to achieve the kind of efficiency that we need on this relatively small site, it made sense to stair-step up the hill. And what that creates is, as you can see in the diagram back here, we've got the terminology is a bay of parking, which is two rows of cars and a driveway down the center. So we began to look at the existing parking lot, the newly acquired site, and then the possibility of surface parking to the west, and broke this up into four different surface parking alternates, and they run from pages 9 through through 12. And really, it's pretty straightforward. Various combinations of these parcels. Alternate 2 and 3 seem to be the preferred. They, because of the configuration, they help us hold the cost per space down. You can see that in alternate 3, efficiency is improved because anytime you add length to a parking lot, which we've done in this scenario, you can improve efficiency. And also, there's not a need, necessarily a need to create an internal ramp near the west edge of the lot for circulation. There is the potential to work all the way over to the west side and recycle, if you will, through the alley property. And gives you adequate circulation. The other nice thing about all of these scenarios is when we enter from LaPointe, we're able to come down the ramp, and patrons would be able to they'd have some visibility of the availability of parking there because of the configuration of the hill. So they are again four alternates that we should look at, and you can see there the difference in the square foot per space is the last column there. Efficiency is really the determining factor. And as you work down to under alternate 3, the 8'6" parking solution, we've got an efficiency of about 340 square feet per space. That's kind of to be expected with the size of the footprint we have and that configuration. Some of the inefficiency comes from having to include the access ramp on the east side of the property that is essentially unparked, but provides access to each one of those bays. Parking, sure.
Just for clarification, when he speaks about efficiency.
Could I have you come up to the podium, please? You got to get on our recording here.
All right. Just for clarification, when he's speaking about the efficiencies, the square footage per parking space, we just want everyone to understand that higher isn't better in this case. So the lower the efficiency, the better the use of the property. So just so everyone understands how that concept works.
Oftentimes, if you include small car parking, tandem parking, those kind of solutions, you can bring that number down into potentially the 300, 310 square feet per space range. But it's a check for us, and then you can see how the inefficiencies of some of the alternates translates into a higher cost per space in the lower section of the page there. But again, in all of these scenarios, it's important to main access from LaPointe, build a surface parking configuration that will allow you to accommodate structured parking if it becomes a reality in the future. The biggest mistake you could make is to grade that hill and configure a surface parking lot without giving any thought to the future future development there. And then, obviously, as Steve said, if structured parking does become a reality, then there are a number of different ways to accommodate potentially a mixed-use development off of LaPointe. I guess that's kind of it in a nutshell. Maybe we can open it up to questions. There are any
questions, Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. If I understand correctly, with the stair stepping, the idea, and specifically looking at alternate three, when you look at A and A1 and then B1 and B, those are actually on different levels. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
This is based on the fact that there is no parking structure being built initially.
Exactly.
And I guess my question or concern here was, have we looked at the cost of the land and the potential where it's going to go? Because when I looked at alternative three, my thought was, okay, well, I understand we don't want to excavate out everything, especially going all the way back to LaPointe, but is there any logic to potentially excavate back to B1, put that all down the same as you've shown it?
Yeah, I think there's some obvious benefit to cutting into the hill, as it were, and the stair step approach, really, if you look at Bay C, you know, at the top of the hill, by these step up roughly 10 feet per bay, and so, you really, if you would excavate in that first phase, like you're saying, then you would potentially create more of a greater envelope to go up into your, assuming your mixed use building matches grade at LaPointe. We also did look at some scenarios where you could then construct a level, kind of an access level for patrons at the level that would occur 10 feet below LaPointe. So there is some potential there, like you say, to look at that. It's really, if that other land is available, it may present that opportunity. We did not include land costs in any of these calculations, so
okay.
There were some unknowns there. We typically leave that out of this scenario. The other thing I should point out is in these alternates, there are existing parking spaces that may remain from the existing configuration there. Those are not included in the cost estimate either. We want a good comparison. So on the on page 13, the costs are strictly for new concrete out there, and the areas only include new parking spaces, none that are existing out there on the sloped access drive. So,
because if the way I look at alternative three, also then, it really, if you were to build A, B, and C stair stepping up the hill, that doesn't allow you then to do any kind of subterranean parking easily underneath of any kind of mixed-use project as well. So I guess if you could get the A and B on the same level, then that allows you, if you wanted to develop C later, to cut in again and then do another set of, so that, and that would be at now the level of B, right. I guess the mid-level, and that would allow then. Okay, I want to make sure I was reading this. I was pretty sure that.
And one of the real the inefficiencies that we're dealing with is the width of the footprint is 147, and that's a little bit problematic when you begin to look at configurations other than this what I'll call no outlet parking bay scenario. That brings the efficiency down some, and then you have the you need to look at some form of internal ramping, and that also affects us. So, when you stair-step the hill, you begin to see what really becomes your most efficient surface parking application on the front side may not be totally what you want, depending on what your needs for further mixed-use development are or structured parking, if the demand is there as you go move ahead.
Thank you. That's all.
Any other questions?
Someone, Warren, if a person turns down one of the bays, B, for instance, with their car, and that their access would be via elevator, but of course it would be elevator plus stairs, correct? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's all. Thank you. That's it?
Is that it?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. You had a question.
In alternate A, where you show the building, do you have a footprint size for what this building is? I mean, it looks huge in this picture, so I wanted to get...
Yeah, there was an earlier study done where some folks looked at the site potentially accommodating, I think, roughly 35,000 square feet.
In that, two stories.
Yeah, in multiple stories. But for this exercise, I think we were looking at roughly 90 feet off of La Pointe, and merely set a building in there conceptually. You know, no real effort.
I'm just trying to get an idea what the building envelope. So it'd be 90 by the width of this.
Yeah. So in the maximum condition, it'd be roughly 147 feet on La Pointe.
Thank you. Did you have something you want to add, Steve?
Well, I just wanted to, if we're done with questions to the consultants, I just wanted to summarize our recommendations real quickly before.
Well, I want to get some public input. Do you want to do that now or do we want to wait?
It might be appropriate now just because this is the completion of the staff report. Okay. It's just the final step in our staff report. That's okay. So thank you, Warren and David. You know, the only thing I wanted to add is, based on that analysis, first of all, concept A is recommended by staff as the preferred concept, and that's because it was found both to be most economical, as well as we believe provides significant flexibility for future expansion. Now, within concept A, staff would recommend alternate two if we are ultimately limited to the existing property. And we propose alternate two because it provides the greatest number of additional parking spaces within the existing property, both in initial surface parking as well as to accommodate a future potential second and maybe third level. However, if we were able to coordinate or incorporate the neighboring property to the west, into the project either through acquisition or a land swap or joint development, then staff would recommend alternate three because we believe that option provides the best balance between providing additional parking spaces as well as flexibility for the maximum level of development potential for the mixed-use development on La Pointe Street frontage. Staff hopes to complete the initial surface parking recommendations within the next 2 to 3 years. We propose a combination of funding between funding received from the mixed-use project, RDA funding, and downtown parking funds. The only thing, other thing I wanted to mention is that at this time, we are not proposing any multi-level funding, the multi-level parking. The goal of this project was to identify surface, a plan for surface level parking that would trigger the need for a parking study. We'd have to look at that. Certainly when we go to looking at multi-level parking, that would trigger that amount, we're sure. So at that time, go ahead.
Any other questions for Steve or clarifications on the staff report? Okay, if not, once again, it's not a public hearing, but would invite members of the public to come forward and comment on this item. Once again, please be mindful of the three-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole.
Terry Fowler, 212 Miller Way, and as you know, my street dumps right into LaPointe at the same location where you're choosing to have the ingress and egress for that parking lot. In the past, we've had a hard time getting anything approved. Last year, we went through this war over secondary residential units. One of the comments was that LaPointe didn't adequately have the circulation to take that increase. Yet you're proposing to add a minimum of 70 parking spaces off of LaPointe. And I want to know if there's been an environmental review done on this. I've worked on several projects, being in engineering and surveying for the last 28 years. I think I know that this is going to have a great impact on LaPointe. I have a couple of bullet items that I'd like to mention. Visual. Has anybody taken into consideration what the visual is going to be if a three-story parking structure is built there for the surrounding residents? I know my house appraised at over $2 million. I really don't want to look out my windows. All my windows on this side of my property face this parking structure. Second one is trip generation. What about the additional traffic that's going to be generated at Mason at the corner of LaPointe? I, for 10 years, have asked for a three-way stop on that intersection. There's been several. They're just fender benders, so they're not a police call because it's only a two-way stop. At that point, that access point, we don't have an access point back there to generate another 70 or 50 even cars. If you have a two-hour limit on a parking on 70 cars, you're talking on Saturday, and you I don't know. Are you guys down here? When I leave my house on Saturday, I go the back route because of the traffic congestion down here. And I'm not complaining about it because I live in the village. I like it. I know it, you know, it generates income for the businesses. Granted, maybe they need parking, but you're proposing to dump 70 to 140 trips within 2 hours on LaPointe on a Saturday for farmers market, which is easy to happen, when on the Strawberry Festival, you have LaPointe blocked off for parking because it's not adequate. So what improvements do you plan on doing on LaPointe? And I can't see, short of tearing down houses or putting the road right to their front door, that LaPointe can be developed that way. The other thing is foot traffic. A lot of people walk on. I walk. I probably walk there every day long before you guys are out of bed. I know what's going on. It comes in here. They get raked over the coals at ARC and Planning Commission to stay within the guidelines. A three-story parking structure in the village of Rio Grande is not within the historic guidelines. What are we going to do on Miller Way? That's a privately owned street with a dead end. When we come down, we're going to come to a corner where we've got, you know, 50 to 70 cars leaving that parking lot on a Saturday. Within a two-hour period? That, you know, has anybody taken into consideration the property owners in that neighborhood? I know for sure Mr. Ferraro was opposed several years ago when the Walmart was going in because he lived on the hill behind it, and he didn't want that extra traffic going to his house. He didn't want to look down on the roof of those retail stores. Well, I don't want to look down on the roof of a parking lot either. And I realize you bought that property for parking. It's been targeted for that. But I think you need to come up with an alternate access for circulation. You own other parking area in the back. It doesn't all have to dump out on the point.
Need to conclude your comments, if you would, please.
Well, I want to know if there has been an environmental review done on this.
I think, you know, your comments are well taken. We're not even close to that yet. This is very preliminary.
Well, I understand that, and I understand if we don't start making our voice and our opinions now, they're going to get lost down the road a year from now.
Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward? No one? Okay. We'll close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council. See, Councilmember Fellows, is my mic on, Kelly? Test check. Councilmember Fellows.
Well, it's my feeling that, as the mayor mentioned, this is it's early in the process, but I also take Ms. Payne's comments to heart, too, because the sooner that we hear from the public on this, the better off we are. I think, though, the drawing, for instance, on the right is diagrammatic, and my thought in looking at it was, no way is that going to end up in the village, but I'm sure we have a few years to work on that. I think we're looking right now at what we can do with the ground-level parking structure. And as much as I find parking and so on to be rather dry, I also know it's important. And to me, it's rather abstract until it's on the ground. However, I read through the report. I read through the report and the staff report, and I think I have to agree that Concept A, Alternative 2, makes the most sense at this time. And since I'm more of a historic structured tree kind of guy, those are all my comments for right now.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just a little curious. If we identify any specific alternative as a preferred right now, I know that some of the options talk about if we obtain the adjacent piece of property that we open up some flexibility. Are we tying ourselves down to anything, or do we still maintain flexibility later on?
Well, first of all, I think what we're recommending is to propose alternate things that are important when we get to that stage when we're focusing in on a plan. Right now, we're just looking for you to, you know, to accept the plan and then give us some direction on preferred alternatives that we can pursue and do some more work on. Does that answer your question?
That does answer the question. One more question that ties back to it. Looking at alternate 2, alternate 3, we're talking about the ground level parking only. We're not talking about building additional levels.
If I could, I don't say more than you want me to, but I'd like to emphasize that again. The real focus here is on the surface level parking. Our goal for the future is just to make sure we're maintaining flexibility so that we can add additional levels if it's determined necessary. As far as looking at pictures for future structures, those are just kind of thrown up there to show how a building could fit on there. There was no task in the contractor's agreement that we asked them to do any kind of focus on what kind of building would be on the private development. We asked them to focus on the parking area so that we could determine what area is left for private development. So they focused little of their intention on that area.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks very much, Steve. Appreciate that. That being said, I can support the approving the feasibility study as it's presented to us. I think Concept A, Alternate 2, or Alternate 3 are probably very good alternatives that we might be able to go forward with in the future. And approving them now in this form does give us the flexibility, and I can support that.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I guess I'll first say on the access issues, I do think that even if we were to find a way to get access onto Branch Street, the congestion on Branch Street would make it problematic to then be able to use that access because you'd have a lot of left turns coming across Branch Street right in one of the most congested areas. So I think ultimately it does end up having to be a LaPointe Street entrance onto this. I, too, can support alternate Concept A, Alternate 3. The one comment I'll make is that I don't think we should be including the backyard of the chambers here. I know that, you know, that's not probably going to happen the way it was proposed here. But I even if we could get that access, I actually wouldn't be in favor of giving up the development potential on this lot to gain four spaces. So I can go with staff recommendation here, looking at that going forward with all of the reviews that will be necessary. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just had two questions, and actually one of them kind of dovetails into a question that was asked of Councilman Fellows earlier. On alternative three, I think the confusion was a little bit was that if you were on a level, let's say A1, under the alternative three, and all the spots were full, you would be forced to back out or make a very tight three-point. But because what's not really shown very clear is that alley, and that is actually there so that you would not, if you came down into alternate level or onto level A, you would be able to go out the left side, go up an alley, and then go up one. And I don't think that was real clear because I didn't notice that either at first. And so I think that is why, because that parking lot to gain space because either there's some efficiencies to be gained or whatever, that's going to be a relatively nominal cost at that point. So, or if we do surface parking on all three levels right now, and then in 10, 15, whatever the time frame is that we need to, again, we would have that option to at that point excavate. So I think the initial value is best for just doing a tiered parking lot, and then down the road, we still have lots of options available to us. I think the basic ramp designs would be there, so we would know that whether or not we want to excavate under the entire property three stories, we would have that option. The other thing I will say is, I unfortunately, these pictures can scare you when you, and I realize that we're talking only about surface, but people see that, and I think the feeling is, oh, my God, where does that fit? And I'm not sure that fits even in a big city, because obviously the scale is wrong. But I think you can go around and look at a lot of smaller towns where they've done parking behind and they've done brick garages and things that are very, very attractive, and they definitely don't convey the big city monolithic building that we have there. So I would expect that if and when we ever do go forward, that it would be a very attractive project and that it would meet all of our design guidelines. So I can go forward tonight supporting I guess it's version one or A, alternative two or three, depending on what we end up working out with the land. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. I would agree with the statements that have been made thus far, and looking ahead at next steps into the future, whatever we do there, I'm certain that it will conform to the village guidelines. It will also require us to take another look at the whole circulation system around LaPointe Street and Mason and so on and so forth. So that was what I indicated when I mentioned it was preliminary. But the only other comment that I can add is that discussions as to the width of parking stalls, 8'6" versus 9 feet, or was that the width or was that the I think one thing we need to consider is that and I think it's probably largely because of the nature of the businesses and our economy here. We have a lot of white vehicles in this city. We have a lot of SUVs. We have a lot of pickup trucks. People that would be clamoring for a parking place might appreciate that extra half a foot. So I think we need to consider that as we move forward.
Our current standard is 9. We were assuming we'd go by that standard, but input, if anybody has input of wanting to direct us to consider anything else, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think wide is the operative word here. So those are my comments. I you know, I like this study. I think it's got a lot of potential and builds in structures and a lot of flexibility for us to do some good things. And finally, hopefully, relieve the parking problem in the village. So I'm looking forward to moving forward with this and working with it in the future. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question first? Sorry, sure. I didn't think of this earlier. We have some of the adjacent property owners here, and I want to ask, 6 appears to be the city property that we're on right now, parcel 26.
Yeah, I don't have that particular APN map. Let me put it up.
Page 14.
Page 14, thank you.
So 26 on the right, that's half green and half white. I'm guessing that's the city property where we are right now. Is that right?
Let's see if I can make this light up. I don't know what happened to me. There we are. Yes, that is the council chambers on Branch Street and the city parking lot in the green portion.
Okay.
The former Dorfman property that we acquired a year ago is 38.
39.
39 is the Murphy recently restored building. Office building. 23 is the Gutierrez property. John is present. We've talked to John and Maureen. The shaded strip that goes all the way from Branch up towards Hooskow Park is the no assessor's parcel number assigned to it because it's city owned.
Which one is that?
The I don't know why my little light isn't there. That piece. And that is partially shaded up to, yes, it goes all the way up to LaPointe Street and would serve as the access alley if Gutierrez property was a part of the extension of the surface parking areas. Okay. You'll see a shaded east-west alignment that would be behind the deli that would be an ADA access connection if the city develops just the green shaded area.
Rob, can I interrupt you for a second? So that's the same strip I was asking about earlier. That's that partially bricked walkway.
Correct.
Between Lund. Okay. And then the dashed line between parcel 1 and on 23 on the Gutierrez property, the dashed line, is that about where the present, also there's a walkway there, is that right?
Yes, right. There's a, the patio is on, yeah, lot 2 and the Classic Horseman and the Branch Street Deli are on the frontage of Lot 1 with a residence and a storage building and vacant area on the back portion of Lot the 23.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Anything else before we go to a motion? Okay. If not, I'll entertain a motion. This item.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose that we adopt the staff recommendation to move forward with concept A, either alternative 2 or 3, depending on the future discussions with the adjacent property owners. And I believe that's all I need to say. Is there anything else anybody wants to add to that? That's it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Okay. Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem, Vice Chair Arnold?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Board Member Fellows?
Yes.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Takes us to 11D, consideration of an ordinance of the City Council regarding Senate Bill 53, eminent domain.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This should be probably the shortest staff report I've ever given. Basically, we have a situation where the state recently adopted SB 53, which requires the legislative body of every community to adopt an ordinance describing the agency's program to acquire real property through eminent domain. However, our redevelopment agency does not have eminent domain authority, and so it is really not an issue to us. However, to comply with this law, we still need to formally adopt the ordinance, and the ordinance simply states that our agency does not have eminent domain authority. And so that's pretty much it. It's been drafted by our redevelopment special counsel that we contract with. I guess the most positive thing I can say is they're on top of things, and they brought this to us, and they're looking out and making sure as things come up that they're forwarding them to us so we can make sure we're in compliance with all redevelopment laws. With that, I would recommend that the City Council introduce the ordinance.
Okay. Any questions for Steve? All right. Let me go straight to the public on this. This is pretty cut and dried. Anyone want to comment on 11D? Okay, hearing none, seeing no one, we'll bring this back. Councilmember Guthrie?
I can approve it as proposed.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello?
I support it as proposed.
Thank you. Councilmember Fellows?
Yes, of course.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Yes.
I'll make it unanimous. And a motion, please.
I move we adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande to comply with the requirements of Senate Bill 53, Chapter 591 of Statutes of 2006, as codified in the California Health and Safety Code, Section 33342.7, by describing that the Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency does not have the authority to acquire real property by eminent domain and therefore has no program to acquire real property by eminent domain.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank the state for that delightful exercise.
How much did it cost them, the attorneys?
Okay, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member Items. Anyone have anything? I have one very brief one, and it's something that... I've already had a discussion with, I mentioned it to Steve and I've talked to Kelly and Walt. And so we're going to be taking another look at this, at least just briefly, to see if we can't cook up something similar. But this is sort of related to the issue that came up at the last council meeting when we were looking at, obviously, some figures that we got from Slocog on the regional traffic model that projected employment rates and so on and so forth that were at least not vetted through the city. And what I've seen other cities do is come up with, for lack of a better term, a community profile. And actually, Kelly showed me one that was done some time ago, Steve, I think when we had an economic development staff person here. And I think with just a little bit of expansion on that, as you indicated, Kelly, I think we can make it fit our needs now, particularly as we look forward and project employment and population. That way, what we've got is a kind of a information clearinghouse for anyone and everyone who might want demographic information related to the city. Here's another example. This was done by the city of Anaheim. The one that they had previously, this is called Anaheim at a Glance. The one that they had previously was actually called the Anaheim Atlas. And my memory serves me, I saw it about 16, 17 years ago. And they were looking at a projection in the future for not only employment but population and economic development as a whole. And back then, 16, 17 years ago, they forecasted and planned for an expansion of the Disneyland Resort and accompanying motels and so on and so forth. And so they were able to come up with some pretty accurate futuristic employment figures. So if you recall what we did at the last meeting, it was largely based on some of the work that Rob had done, but we actually looked at our commercial and mixed-use land that's available in the city, and it was based on that Rob made his employment projection. And Kelly was telling me that we're working right now developing our GIS capability. And so I think that would fit nicely into a little pamphlet like this that I think would really serve our city well. And if it's based on general plan, if it's based on land use facts here in the city, it's going to be hard to dispute that. So I'm thinking that we ought to do a preemptive strike here and develop an accurate document that reflects our demography and have it available for those that might want to incorporate that information into any kind of a regional study. So with the council's permission, and if it's okay with you, Steve, I'd like to just sort of take another look at developing something like this. And I can work, Kelly, I can work with you and Walt on this, and I don't see much. I think probably Walt and maybe Ryan could run with this.
That was my recommendation, to get Ryan involved.
Yeah.
So a lot of the state is exactly the type of thing he's working on at this time.
So would that be okay with everyone?
Most definitely.
That's good.
Okay. All right, that will take us to item 13, city manager items. Anything? Okay, 14, council communication.
Just have one.
Okay.
I'd like to remind everyone that the EBC has their goal-setting retreat a week from Friday, and so if you have any input into issues that you'd like me to bring up with them, I would appreciate an email with some suggestions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other council communication, staff communications?
Just to follow up regarding the meeting that Mayor Ferraro requested, that we schedule a joint meeting with Grover and Pismo Beach on Greenbelt. So tentatively, we're scheduled for June 7th, which is a Thursday at 6 o'clock at the Regional Center.
Did Grover decide on that last night, or?
They didn't. They weren't able to get to that item on their agenda, and so they didn't make a decision. It's been forwarded to their next agenda, but I talked to their city manager, and he felt it was best that we at least go ahead and start planning it, even though they haven't discussed it yet.
Okay. And I think they had other business, pressing business on the agenda last night. So, okay. That takes us to item 16, our community comments and suggestions. This is our last opportunity for members of the public. We have three members of the public. Anyone who would like to come forward on any item, this would be an opportunity.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. My name is Joel Kauser. I live in 707 Asilo. I'm also on the Traffic Commission, and I was watching the council meeting at home this evening. And with all of the discussions on traffic, one of the PG&E topic never came through us, through the commission. So I just thought I'd come down tonight and add some comments, because it's early in the planning stage and maybe could be incorporated. The 5-acre parcel that they were looking at, and the lease and monetary benefit, I think would not offset the traffic problems generated for the city in that area. Breaking up the 400 space need between the county space above it, the backside and west side of Walmart, Kmart, and then also the outlet center would probably be the easiest and most effective way to move the cars around. We have the new signals down there at Mercado, and the bridge has just been restriped so that anyone going southbound could avoid Briscoe and take Branched Oak Park to El Camino and onto the southbound freeway, which is actually in Grover Beach. But there's many ways to provide the service that PG&E needs without impacting the Briscoe Halcyon underpass, which is at 6 p.m. The 200 leaving would be very disruptive. So that was my my comment on that one. On the earlier topic of the traffic study that we had, were the impact fees and if it required a study to be done. The commission, well, Steve identified some of them earlier this evening, but in lieu of having a study done for a small occupancy or additional amount of traffic, if that could be, if the same dollars could be transferred directly into a fund to provide needed infrastructure that we already know of. We have identified all the problem areas in the city, and if someone wants to expand a business or start a new business, then they should be required to come up with some kind of impact fees to help out with the infrastructure that we still need in that city. So that was on the small ones. The large ones, yes, they need the study because they would put a lot of vehicles on the road. We broke it down on the 20 trips per hour. The reason we raised that was 20 trips per hour is one car every 3 minutes. Even at peak traffic, we can infuse one car every 3 minutes. So we found, we thought that raising that number or looking at raising the number was, you know, something that should be studied. My second topic of the evening.
We're running short of time here.
Short of time. Okay. I was reading through the water rate increases for the city. In fact, I was doing that earlier today, and I came upon the same thought that I've had before. The state mandates us to flush water down from the dam for the fish. We should be compensated for that, either in replacement water or compensated for it. I don't know how that would happen or if that's ever been thought of or discussed previously, but I think we should be compensated.
We got just the man for you to talk to. He'll be happy to explain that to you, Joel.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We'll close our final community comments and suggestions, and that will take us to item 17, adjournment.
So moved.
Yeah, the state's going to compensate us for that.